People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. And we're going to be talking theatre. Peter Turin is presenting The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime to reopen the Theatre on the Bay, which has been extensively refurbished, and that's on the 1st of October. It's based on a novel by Mark Haddon, adapted by Simon Stevens, and has been directed for Peter Turin by Paul Warwick Griffin. It has a large all-star cast, and two of the cast members are with me here in the studio, Liz Shimshack and Nicholas Ellenbogen, who in fact are a husband and wife team. And I'd like to read a little bit about them. First of all, Liz graduated from UCT in 1975 and started her journey in the theatre. She married Nicholas Ellenbogen a year later. Together, they have had three beautiful children, Matthew, Luke, and Amy. And then they left for the Valley of a Thousand Hills for Nick to start a multiracial theatre company with the National Arts Council South Africa, the Loft Company at NAPAC. Now, Nicholas wrote some incredible plays then, like Horn of Sorrow and a Nativity. Then 7 years later, they returned to Johannesburg and thereafter ventured further up north for a couple of years to Tanzania and Kenya, working in 7SADAC. And they lived in villages, worked on issues that significantly affected the villages, and issues like poaching, land tenure, overfishing, and crop raiding all affected them and their work. They went from village to village debating these issues after each performance. And Liz was the voice teacher for these multinational actors. Each important word had to be clearly heard for the debate after the performance. Nicholas, incidentally, is celebrating 50 years in the professional theatre this year, a true theatre maker who's won many awards for his acting, directing, designing, and playwriting. He's had over 150 of his plays performed around the world. Nicholas and Liz, a warm welcome to Fine Music Radio and to People of Note.
Well, it's lovely to be with you, Rodney.
How was that for an introduction? Gosh,
wow,
all your ventures around Africa.
Well, the good things, I don't remember much of it. So.
But I sort of constantly think of you as a director and doing so, but it's nice now that you're part of a Peter Turin production.
Nick. Well, I worked for Peter in Johannesburg, I suppose, about 45 years ago. And it was a sort of whodunit kind of thing, and I don't remember the name. I think it was called Murder Is Announced.
And didn't you have a bucket of cold water that fell
every
on you
night.
Every night? And it was winter time in Joburg.
Mike Richards hurled a bucket of water on me. You're quite right. It was, and I loved working for Peter because I think nobody has done as much to keep actors employed and in touch with the world as Peter has. So, I mean, I'm a great admirer of Peter's, and although the kind of work he does is not my kind of work, I'm an Africa promoter, being in touch with the world is really critical, and this is a play that is playing West End and comes out of the National Theatre. To get a play like this onto our stages with a vast cast is just wonderful. This is an opportunity definitely not to miss for local theatre lovers.
Liz, tell me a little bit about the play, and because it is, as I said, there, it does have a large cast, as you said, Nick.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a comedy? Is it a few people I've spoken to said, oh, they've read the book, have you not read the book? And I haven't read the book, so I know nothing about it.
It's a whodunit, in a way. Mm-hmm. I had read the book a long time ago, and then after our auditions and we got into the play, I reread it. And when we started working on the play, it's been so cleverly adapted to the theatre. And it is such a powerful play. And it's funny and it's exciting.
Immensely sad.
And very moving.
Give me the sort of gist of what it's about, because it has to do with autism, I seem to remember.
Yes, it's about an autistic boy whose mother has an affair with the next door neighbour. And then goes away with the next door neighbor, and the father says that she's died.
You're not allowed to say more than that.
Yes, otherwise I'll give
yes.
the whole.
No, don't do that.
No, but I think what is so clever, Rodney, is that it's one of those wonderful funny bone plays, and it's not a black comedy. It's wonderfully it, you just can't help adoring this boy's journey. Mm-hmm. And there's such an innocence, and it's so accurately done in terms of this affliction. And we are extremely lucky. We have a director from London, Paul Warwick Griffin. And Paul, who studied psychology and wound up as a director, is a sensational director.
Absolutely. You know, I will second that.
For
he's
me,
fabulous.
Oh, it's a learning experience. And he's a great believer in the ensemble. And I look around the room, and we're all connected. We've all had connections with each other. Mm-hmm. And at last, I'm on stage with Kate Normington. You know, it's one of those sort of moments mm-hmm. that 50 years in the theater, you kind of wait for and hope will happen in your life, you know.
It's interesting, Nick, hearing you say that you've learned so much from Paul Warwick Griffin because of your success as a director. So that's quite a compliment to him.
He directs very like I do, but with a much more up-to-date, a far more sophisticated directing style than we're used to. We used to have directors who came from overseas, German, American, Dutch, and we've had less over the years. And you've got to, as a South African at the bottom of Africa, you've got to keep in touch with how theatre is surviving.
Right, right.
And in fact, succeeding.
And that's why you said Peter Turin is playing such a big role in that, in keeping us in touch.
Well, he is. You know, you can say, oh, no, not another production of Cats. Or
No.
But in fact, there's these new generations of theatre goers come along every year. Mm. And so you've got to keep them interested. And that is a fantastic job that Peter has done.
Now, look, with two people on People of Note, which is unusual, call it Persons of Note, we've got two separate choices of music here. And ladies first, I think, Nicholas.
Ready?
Liz, I think, what
you
is your...
You gender-based person.
What is your first choice, Liz?
Silver Thunderbird.
And a reason for that?
The reason for that was we were working at Sun City, and we were doing Horn of Sorrow. And we were actually living in the Pilansberg and then working and performing in Sun City, which was a soulless, ghastly place. But the Pilansberg was heavenly with the animals and the birds. And I was the person who had to go backwards and forwards from the Pilansberg to Joburg every week and collect the provisions. And I used to speed down the highway with this music played as loud as I could, and it was splendid.
Okay, let's relive that a little.
Watch it coming up Winslow down South Park Boulevard. It was looking good from tail to hood. Great big fins and painted steel. Man, it looked just like the Batmobile with my old man behind the wheel. Well, you could hardly even see him in all of that chrome. The man with the plan and the pocket comb. But every night it carried him home, and I could hear him saying, don't you give me no Buick. Son, you must take my word. If there's a God in heaven, he's got a silver Thunderbird. You can keep your Eldorados, and the foreign car's absurd. I wanna go down in a silver Thunderbird. Got up every morning while I was still asleep. But I remember the sound of him shuffling around right before the crack of dawn. When I heard him turn the motor on, but when I got up they were gone. Down the road in the rain and snow, the man and his machine would go. Oh, the secrets that old car would know. Sometimes I hear him saying, don't you give me no beauty. Son, you must take my word. If there's a God in heaven, he's got a silver thunderbird. You can keep your Eldorados and my foreign cars of soul. Me, I wanna go down in a silver thunderbird. Machine would go. All the secrets that old car would know. I still hear him saying, don't you give me no Buick. Son, you must take my word. If there's a God up in heaven, he's got a silver thunderbird. You can keep your Eldorado and the foreign cars of sin. Me, I wanna go down in a silver thunderbird. Me, I wanna go down in a silver thunderbird.
That was Silver Thunderbird, Mark Cohen there, and the first choice of one of my two guests on People of Note this week, Liz Shimshack, who is with Nicholas Ellenborgen in the play The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is opening at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay, and in fact is opening the theatre. I mentioned, Liz and Nick, well, you mentioned as well, Nick, this huge cast, Kai Brummer as Chris Boone, there's Kate Normington, Leseko Siabe, Dylan Eddy, Clayton Everston, Ashley Dowds, someone called Nicholas Ellenborgen.
Never heard of him.
Gina Galloway. So it's quite a big ensemble cast. Do you two like working with a big ensemble cast?
Oh, well, I've loved it. Yeah, I've absolutely loved it.
We've built ensembles several times, and it's very different. When you develop ensembles, the Loft, Theatre for Africa, these were great ensembles. You just trust the people inside them or they don't work. And it's been absolutely fabulous because there's such a caring buzz. Mm. In this particular one, I think our ensemble has the function of looking after Kai. So it's not a straightforward situation. He has a massive story to tell, and there's this wonderful circle of people around him. And it's very clever because it's not a goody choo-choo's ensemble. It's very West End, actually. Mm-hmm. I love it because I'm able to learn and learn and learn, you know. And everybody in the theatre who's still in the theatre after 2 years has learned that working in a team is everything.
This character, Christopher Boone, played by Kai Brummer, what sort of age is he ideally?
He's 15. In the book, okay. And in the play. And Kai, I think, is about 22, 23. Mm-hmm. But he is so believable as a young boy. Mm-hmm. And he's put so much hard work into it with such a lot of feeling for this child, this boy, this young man, who can't really relate to the outside world, but is a genius in a way.
Yes. Yeah, he's a genius. I mean, he's a trapped genius, what he is.
Gosh. It's a fairly contemporary setting. I see a date of some...
2011.
2011.
Which is, of course, really contemporary.
Mm, absolutely.
But the we're thing all is on
it's
stage.
In London. And you it's can't very escape sort of that the story is told Swindon, London.
Sorry, Liz, you were going to say?
We're all on stage, and it's very clever the way things are moved around to make different areas and different homes and and the subway and things like that.
Uh-huh. It's the amazing thing, as you said, Nicholas, about the director's skill, isn't it? To take a piece like this and
overview.
To be able to work with it, the overview.
Rodney, to see that, it's like being the conductor of an orchestra, but where your sections are not all in the room. The one is being built here, and the lighting technology is being created to create the play.
Yes.
And, of course, we have a very experienced musical director in Charles. I mean, he knows his way around technology, not just as a musician composer, but actually way beyond that. And this is the world we're moving into.
And we're talking about Charles Johann Lingenfelder.
Yes.
He wrote the music specially for this, did he?
Yes, did he?
Yeah, it's very, very mood dependent kind of. We as actors depend on him a lot, because although you've got, say, the shutting of a doorway, the way that Charles interprets that is important, and he's a genius at that sort of thing.
Gosh, and I'm trying to decide whether it's a comedy or a thriller. I think you've mentioned both.
You will laugh, but boy, will you cry!
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's very moving.
You will. It's immensely moving because of its innocence.
Oh, right. That's an interesting way of putting it.
You know, we have great fear of things happening to children, to animals, to the innocent. And that is a thread that keeps this play very taut.
Gosh. You're making, of course, now I have to see it, I'm afraid.
Well,
I'm
you're a bloody come. Idiot if you don't.
Let's have your first choice, Mr. Ellenborgen. I see you've chosen Sheep May Safely Graze by Bach.
Yes, my mother, it was her favorite sort of little piece, but it was the first time I played in an orchestra, I think probably as the sixth trumpet. I'm not sure I got past this fifth trumpet. Anyway, I peeped and tooted, and that's what we played, so it's always remained close to my heart.
And now you specially asked for it to be played in its orchestral version, not with a soprano.
Well, because that's how we did it. And I remember Sandy McCall-Smith, who was my great chum at school. He was way up the ranks, you know. I think he was playing clarinet then. Yeah, it would have been something like that. And you know, he had quite serious involvement. He didn't have to count 400 and then go, ba-bum.
Yeah. It's happened sometimes.
Special memories.
Okay, here we go. Sheep May Safely Graze by Bach.
Thank you.
an instrumental version of Sheep May Safely Graze by Bach from one of his cantatas with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, conducted by Sir Neville Mariner. It was the choice of one of my guests, Nicholas Ellenborgen, on People of Note this week. Nicholas and his wife Liz are with me in the studio. They are both taking part in the play that's about to open at the Theatre on the Bay, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Now, I'm going to come back to that, but Liz and Nick, your biogs are so interesting because of this Africa thing, going up to Tanzania and Malawi and working with those people. I'm just interested briefly how that came about. Why did you leave the comfort of South Africa and the theatre world and go up to really what must have been very experimental?
I'm going to chip in first because Liz, we had done a lot of work in South Africa and there was a sort of feeling that there was a touch of the self-satisfaction about the struggle work. But in fact, Africa is very largely a rural population. And my feeling was we were continually doing pieces, literally from the market to Cape Town to anywhere. We were focusing on what was happening in the cities. But in fact, what was happening rurally was bigger and more important. And there was another thing. We had this great claim that we'd sort of reinvented theatre through struggle theatre. And I knew that wasn't true. I knew that it was a wonderful fusion of energy, but I also felt very strongly that there was an African theatre that we did not know about. So to me, that journey was a critical way, and we did it collectively. It was Liz, myself, and many others. We went to learn from the villages where theatre was still the language. And it was a much bigger learning journey than we'd ever imagined because there was so much out there.
How was theatre the language in the villages?
Well, when we'd go to a village, we'd be met by the chief and then we'd see the dancers dancing and the drummers. And in that way, we sort of found out about their storytelling and the issues that they were involved with, and we would choose a group of people to work with, and we would nourish them because they would be malnourished, and work with them and talk to them about their issues and build up a play about poaching or crop raiding or
the issues, whatever they were.
And then take them round to the villages and they would deal with them in their debates as they sat around and talked after the show.
I think there was another critical requirement at that time, and it hasn't changed. The NGOs of the world that were sort of scrambling to get into and recolonize Africa, all the sort of stuff coming out of Geneva and Washington and so on, it was very prescriptive. It is what they had studied at Cambridge must now be applied to Africa. And we felt that that wasn't really the truth. The people who knew, the guardians of this world that had still lived with elephant and still managed to survive with very little help from governments, they knew much more than Geneva about how to do it. So we said we have to become a conduit between that, and we must be very careful that it wasn't what we thought. And that's a humbling experience because people really do know, who live out there, how to manage their lives. So that was a hard fight because the people funding us were the World Bank and sort of IUCN and WWF. These people all are prescriptive. They tell you what they want you to go and find out. Well, that's nonsense. And there was also, and certainly with Mandela and Mbeki, there was a strong support for learning, not prescribing.
Okay.
And that was, I suppose that was why we felt a little bit inflamed at that time. Also, the acting techniques. Studied with the Bushmen, spent time living with them. Why do they do what they do? And, you know, that taught us a massive amount about movement.
But now, Liz, I wanted to ask you, you spoke about language here. I mentioned that you helped with language and communication. What language did you do these plays in? The indigenous languages or in English?
No, in English.
You did them in English.
And the people that we found round and about could speak English in the various different villages. Most of them could, which is very interesting. But I was the voice teacher. I was the vocal coach. And it was difficult because the different dialects had the tongue in a different sort of way, and it was hard for people to hear and to get the right pronunciations. But we felt that we wanted to take these actors around the world, so they needed to speak good English so that they could be heard wherever we went.
And they also wanted that.
Yes.
They felt that
which is important, that's important.
Yes, it was very limited. And for them to survive, and this was also, from Liz and my point of view, a job creation. We wanted to leave behind people who had the capacity to work when we'd gone. And everywhere we went, even in Mozambique, they were saying, it's got to be in English. The tourists are either English or Germans who speak English. So please, can we do this in English? Mm-hmm. There were some that were specially designed, like working around Lake Nyasa, Malawi, where they used their own dialect because that was the audience.
Right.
And they had a different function. But Liz was so valuable because you've got to be heard, you know, in Geneva or in Washington, and because that's where critical decision makers were being brought to performances, and we had a massive effect on votes. Quite a number of times we were absolutely key to changing a vote.
That was in 1997 in Harare. They downgraded Ivory at CITES. And I really believe that the play that Nicholas wrote that we were in that went round the world, Guardians of Eden, had a powerful effect on that.
And these are people from that area that you took literally
around the particular play, they were from seven SADC countries.
Yes.
Gosh, my goodness me. I think let's have another piece of music. Liz, it's your turn. We're going to be fair. And I see you've got Forever Young coming up.
Yes, please, by Bob Dylan.
Dear, why?
I love that song. I think the words are magnificent. I think he's a fabulous poet, Bob Dylan. You couldn't often hear him saying his words, but he was just the most wonderful poet. And I sang it for Nicholas's 50th birthday 20 years ago.
Yeah, she wouldn't buy me a present. That was it. But she sang a lot clearer than Bob Dylan.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars, climb on every rung, and may you stay. Forever young, forever young, may you stay forever young. To be righteous, may you grow up to be true, may you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous, stand upright and be strong, and may you stay forever young. May your hands always be busy. May your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of change shift. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. And may you stay.
That was Bob Dylan, Forever Young. I want to say the inimitable Bob Dylan, Liz, because he's such a unique sound, isn't it, really? And as you said,
I just love his music.
Maybe not the best diction in the world, but I think we got the gist. Now, Liz Shimchak is my guest, along with Nicholas Ellenborg, and they're in the play The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is about to open Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay after its refurbishment. I'm really looking forward to hearing that. And we're talking about your extraordinary career in Africa. And one of the things that I remember, apart from what you said, Liz and Nick, you know, doing these plays based on local stories and actually taking them around the world, you also met up with Alexander McCall Smith, and an opera came out of that, which actually came down to Cape Town, and I'd like you to remind us about that.
I think you should chat here, Nick.
Okay. I grew up with Alexander. He was my next-door neighbor and fellow famous Five and Secret Seven reader.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we grew up in a kind of horsey, innocent world, and we had close friendship. He's an absolutely superhuman being. And then he has just made a massive success of everything he's done, and he's given himself the right to write operas. And the baboon opera, as we call it, Okavango Macbeth, is a fairly off-the-wall opera, but it has a success that won't die. It was first done as a sort of oratorio, you know, stand up in a row and sing your line. And I was very disappointed to hear that. And then Sandy decided that he needed a number one ladies' opera house in Gaborone.
And this is related to his detective series, wasn't it? The
number
one ladies' detective.
Massive
yes. success.
I mean,
massive
I think success. He's on number 20 or something.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Nearly as many as Raiders, which is on 30.
But anyway, we'll come back to that. You're not going to get away with that.
So Sandy has always loved music. He had one time had the largest saxophone collection in the world, and one of them you had to climb a ladder to play anyway. So Sandy wrote this, and it's really a study of baboon behavior, their sort of maternal side. So in a way, it was more about Lady Macbeth, but it gave itself a very physical opportunity. So when he opened this ladies' opera house, he then said, would I come and direct the opera there?
Was it literally an opera house? I mean, in a sense,
it was a
large
big
space.
Square room. Okay. And it was awful. And so I went there, saw the space, and said, this is not acceptable. with your reputation, you've got to have a much finer space than this. So we built lovely chairs, and we made it an intimate and fantastic. It was a gorgeous theatre, actually.
Oh, what a beautiful space.
Really?
What a beautiful space.
In Gaborone.
Just outside in Kigali.
Okay. In the copies. It was lovely. And so we made this intimate opera house.
Smallest opera house in the world.
The only problem was that when we had big chorus numbers, we had to open the back wall and put them outside so that there was room for an audience inside. But that all actually worked terribly well. And I thought that would be the end of that, because it was with local singers. And then the University sort of Opera Musical Society of Edinburgh, they heard about it, thanks to the BBC filming it. And we were going to Edinburgh, and he said, well, will I come and direct it there? And that became a sort of habit. And then I did it for Save the Children and so on. But then, with the help of Michael Maas, I got a rehearsal room here, and we did it here. And we got a fantastic response, but an absolutely snobby dismissal from Cape Town Opera. I mean, honestly, I wish I'd kept it. You would have had a good giggle. Because there was this piece that was enchanting people. It was very African. They, I think, have the perfect company to take it round the world for the next 10 years. Tom Cunningham, who wrote the music, is a very fine composer. And none of them really even came to see it. You know, it was too below them.
I think the concept is just beyond your ken. Mm. Yeah. Okavanga, Macbeth.
I mean, playing baboons is pretty
But playing tricky. Baboons, it just, you can't get your mind around it.
I know.
But audiences loved it, and they understood it.
Yes, they did.
Because, you know, baboons are thinking primates. You know. It was a gorgeous experience. I also did another one of Sandy's, which has just won a big award in Edinburgh, called Fergus of Galloway, which is really a snippet of a piece.
An opera.
Yes, and we had Daniel Richards and Sinead Ludlow, and it just took off here. Sold out for us.
One of the best shows we had at the Rosebank. It was outstanding.
Was the music written by the same person who
yes.
wrote the Macbeth?
Yes.
So he obviously
Tom Cunningham.
With Alexander McCall
Yeah,
Smith.
And he's quite a whiz with sort of big harmony works.
Okay.
He and Sandy have written three operas.
So what has happened to the opera house just outside Gaborone now?
Well, it's still calling itself that, but it's really just a little...
Become a tea spot. House.
It's tea house, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So all those beautiful seats and lovely space, all been pulled out, and now it's become a coffee house.
What happened is Sandy's
lease
came
expired.
To an end.
Okay, fair
yeah.
enough, fair enough.
Yeah.
And anyway, and then you came back to South Africa, to Cape Town, and here you are. And we love you being here, and you did 30,000 editions of Raiders, which we'll come to in a moment. After, Nicholas, you've given me your next choice, which I see is Haydn's Trumpet Concerto, oh. played by a rather beautiful young lass.
Well, she's young to me. She's a blonde bomber. I tell you, when I saw her on stage in Edinburgh, I tell you, I thought, oh, this is what angels look like.
We're talking about Alison Balsam. Here she is.
I'm so glad you pronounced it for me, because I've never known how to say it.
Oh.
Balsam.
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 Ends with an M.
Well, she's a wonderful trumpeter.
She is. She's having a fantastic career.
Is she?
Very much so.
I'm thrilled about that.
Thank you.
Haydn's Trumpet Concerto, the last movement there with Alison Balsam as the trumpeter and the North German Chamber Orchestra in Bremen. And it was the choice of my guest, Nicholas Ellenbogen, who, along with his wife, Liz Shimchak, are in the studio with me on this week's edition of People of Note, talking about the play that's about to open, the revamped Theatre on the Bay, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Liz, I want to just turn the spotlight on you for a moment, because Nicholas, you know, told us the whole Alexander Smith story. Thank you, Nicholas. Thank you very much. But Liz, tell me a little bit about your background pre-Nicholas. Has theatre always been in your life? Is it there all the time?
I don't have theatre in my family. I don't have anybody in my family who went into the arts. But as a young child, my father died when I was 10, and as a young child, I loved thinking up things and dreaming about things. And then when I went to America with my mum, because my mum came from six sisters, and I went to go and see Sound of Music in New York when it first came out, and I thought, oh, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to be on the stage. I then pursued that idea, but my parents were not very keen on it. And I came down to UCT, and I had three good years here, and then I joined KPAP, and that's where I met Nick.
Oh, right. And then we have to use the cliche, the rest, as they say, is history.
Exactly.
Because in a sense, your career was launched, and you started getting roles, and all sorts of things started happening. Do you write at all, Liz? Or
no, I don't write. Okay. I don't write. Nicholas is the writer.
She spells.
I'm a good speller.
Is Liz your spell check?
Yes, tell you, correct the spelling.
Not even the computer recognizes my spelling, so I need Liz's help. No, Liz has had a lot to do with the workshopping and helping pieces, mm-hmm. which is a big part of what we call writing, you know.
Of course. And I mean, in all your work in Natal as well, in Durban with the Loft Company and all that, that was terribly important, wasn't it? And it must have been a lot of fun at the time.
Oh, it was a wonderful amount of fun. I absolutely adored living in Assegai. And the children went to wonderful schools, and we were so involved in the community. And I was very sad to leave and go back to Joburg.
It's just we were performing more and more in Joburg, and it became silly to live in Durban. We were traveling north all the time, and to go north, you go from Durban to Joburg.
Indeed. And then what brought you to Cape Town, apart from an aeroplane or a car or those
things? I think strict words from Liz to say, go and find a co-ed school for Luke. He doesn't want to go to Michael House, like his brother, and he wants to go to a co-ed school, and he doesn't want to go to a private school. It was a very fierce instruction, I thought.
And I loved my years at university here. So I wanted to come back.
Mm-hmm. Now, your children are also actors, aren't they?
Well, all of them have acted with us. Matthew's like me, he's a sort of business science bloke, and he has a big firm in Johannesburg that he's a partner in. But he took a year out and worked as an actor with us. Yeah, Matt, I think Liz always thought that it was too insecure for him.
Too precarious.
Oh, really? Because Luke is the one, the name that springs to mind.
We needed Luke. Luke was a kind of glue from the time he was about 15. We used to say, can you remember that song we wrote yesterday?
Yes, can you?
And Luke was that memory. And then, of course, he took a two-year gap, did he?
He went to Mozambique with you.
Yeah, and he worked on a big World Bank project. And he and Tlantla Nkwenazi worked together, and they were fantastic as a team. And then we had to say, now it's university time. And so then he went to university, and he stayed in the theatre ever since. He's now at the Fugard. Sorry, Peter, I had to mention the Fugard. And our daughter, Amy, Liz, I think, was the best actress of the lot.
Yes, she did an awful horror thing when she was at school in about Standard 8, and they were thrilled with her, and they wanted her to come and do the next one. I said, nope. Definitely not.
You can each have one shot at a movie, and that's it. Bank the money.
She's in the art world. She's an art curator.
Okay.
She's just curated the Johannesburg Art Fair, and, you know, there's been this awful painting with Mandela and the swastikas.
Very stressful.
World.
She was the one who took it down.
Oh, gosh, my goodness. Yeah. Not very, an easy world. One assumes that world is cushy, doesn't one?
Oh,
and
no,
it's
no,
anything
no, no,
but. Like no. The theatre is anything but.
Yeah. I think it's slightly more backbiting than theatre. Theatre, we are always teams, you know. Mm-hmm. And her world is, you know, there are lots of galleries and they're very competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to ask now for another choice of music from you, Liz, because we're nearing the end of the program, and I want to just go back to the play in a moment. But I see you've got Elton John coming up now.
Yes, that's what friends are for. I love that song. When it came out, it just touched something in me, and I just love it.
Don't ask me that.
Who wrote What Were Friends
With? Look on the record.
I don't know, but it's just my favorite.
Who sings it?
And you want the Elton John version?
Yes, the Elton John version.
Well, be very agreeable, and we'll give that to you. Here we go.
Thank you.
And I feel this way, far as I'm concerned, glad I got the chance to say that I do believe I love you. And if I should ever go away, well then close your eyes and try to feel the way we do today. And if you can remember, keep smiling, keep shining. Oh, you can always count on me. For sure. That's what friends are for good times, for bad times. I'll be on your side forevermore. That's what friends are for. And for the times when we're apart, well then close your eyes and know these words are coming from my heart. And then if you can remember, and I never thought I'd feel this way, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad I got the chance to see. Oh, I really, really love you. Oh, that's what friends are for good times and bad times. I'll be on your side forevermore. That's what friends are for. Keep smiling, keep shining.
Elton John, that's what friends are for. The choice of one of my guests, Liz Shimchak, and Nicholas Ellenborgen is here. And before we get back to the play, just to remind people what we've been talking about, one of the things, Nicholas, I cannot avoid asking you is your extraordinary series of Raiders of and all those extraordinary titles. What was that all about?
Well, for 30 years, I've been doing them at Grahamstown. This was the 30th. And that is quite something, really.
It is, of course.
Because to come up with a new story every year is quite hard. But it was sort of by demand. I tried to stop after 10 years, and there was a bit of an outcry, and people started to challenge me in the streets and beat me about the person. And so I did carry on. And there's still been a wonderful demand for it. It's never been out of the kind of top three box office at Grahamstown. But I am not going to do the next one. I'm handing it over to younger and fitter folk and hoping to keep it in Luke's, because Luke's always had a lot to do with Raiders, mm-hmm. either scripting or directing or performing in it. And I suppose in a way it's a very special time of year for Luke and I. So I'm going to hand it over to younger people, and it'll be a new age of Raiders.
Give me a couple of the titles.
Well, I think one of my favorite was probably Raiders of the Scarlet Pimple. And then there are things
there
like...
There was the Purple Panther.
There was the Raiders of the Purple Panther. What did I do with David Crum?
And there
Crum?
Was Raiders Lord of the Dings.
That was Andrew Brent. The titles are... We have to provide the titles in January. And, of course, we only start working on it in June.
Yes. So it gets, once you've got the title, you've got to sort of pretty well... What was I thinking when I wrote that title?
Well, then you've got to be honest towards your pre-publicity, which you can't be, because instead of a man, you've got a woman in it with you, and yes. you know, and so on. Women are good in Raiders.
Okay.
Yeah, they provide a definite...
You didn't like me in Raiders.
New angle.
Listen to your wife.
You just allowed me in.
Slantler and Liz, I did one with them and thought, never again. They're too good as actors. They're too deep.
Listen to poor Liz saying, I was outstanding. You know what? We have to stop now. It's too much. We can't have all this fun. But let me just say that one of the many reasons I invited Nicholas Ellenbogen and Liz Shimchak into the studio was to talk about the curious incident of The Dog in the Night, Peter Tureen's production at the Theatre on the Bay, opening on the 1st of October, directed by Paul Warwick Griffin. And by the sounds of things, as you heard earlier, it's something not to be missed.
Don't miss it.
Okay. You've convinced me. So there. You, Nicholas, have the last choice of music before we pull the curtain down.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I've written about 19 musicals, and we've avoided playing anything from any of them, and I think we should continue to do that.
Okay, I'll go along with that. Well, let's go to Mozart.
I'd love Mozart. And with a little bit of singing, possibly?
Oh, yes. Let's go to The Marriage of Figaro.
Lot of singing in there.
Let's go to Voi che sapete.
Oh, naughty, naughty.
Liz and Nicholas, thank you for being lovely, entertaining guests.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been delightful.
It's lovely to be in the studio.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Don't miss The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, presented by Peter Turin. From the best-selling novel comes this multi-award-winning play, directed by Paul Warwick Griffin, with an unforgettable cast including Kai Brummer, Lesoho Siabe, Ashley Dowds, Kate Normington, Nicholas Ellenbogen, Liz Simchak, Jenny Stead, Jenna Galloway, Dylan Eady, and Clayton Evertson. Embark on this extraordinary life-changing journey, making its South African debut at the new Theatre on the Bay, September 25. Book now at peterturin.co.za.